Welcome, everybody. Good evening. It is Tuesday, May 19th, 2020, and time just keeps passing us by so quickly. It is 6:04 for the record. Anita is absent this evening. And we'd like to call this meeting to order, so if we would please have roll call.
Councilmember Beck.
Here.
Councilmember Betancourt is not here. Councilmember Fast.
Here.
Councilmember Salino.
Here.
Here. Are there any additions or deletions to the agenda?
There are none from staff, Mayor.
Very good. We go on to administrative business. Oh, can we have a vote, please?
Sorry. I'll move.
Second. Go ahead.
Councilmember Salino?
Yes.
Councilmember Beck?
Yes.
Councilmember Fast?
Yes.
Yes. Admin business, item one, consideration of items pertaining to a temporary business utility bill forgiveness program. Admin.
Not sure if that microphone's
working. All right. Thank you, Mayor. I'm not quite sure about that microphone, so I will be over here on the podium tonight. So, Mayor and Council, last Tuesday night we met and had a discussion about the ongoing efforts with the coronavirus, how it was impacting our city, how it was impacting our state, and part of the conversation was very much how it was impacting our businesses. Direction was given to staff to return this Tuesday with an idea, essentially something, even if it could only be something token, that could help our businesses through this time. So just something that would tell them how much we appreciate them and that we understand what they're going through. So, and we very much appreciate the opportunity to do that, by the way. So we did get some heads together on Wednesday morning and talk through some options that we have. And what we came up with, what we thought would be the most meaningful, even though, again, it's not much. We're a small city without a lot of budget. But what we thought may be the most meaningful is a utility forgiveness program for the months of April and May, for businesses that were required to shut down, considered non-essential during the virus period. So what you have before you today is an item with two action items associated with it. One is the resolution that would adopt a temporary business utility bill forgiveness program, utilizing $25,000 from the general fund reserve, and I'll explain in a minute why we chose that funding source. And resolution amending the adopted budget for 1920, not to be confused with the budget that we're currently working on, were workshops for next year, but adopted budget for 1920, amending that $25,000 in the general fund reserve for this program. So our thought was to put together a program where businesses could apply. If businesses were forced to shut down and they did pay their utility bill, their sewer, water, and solid waste bills for April and May, a credit would be put onto their account for in the amount of 2 months' worth. If they did not pay April and May because they were shut down, we would forgive that. Our thought process in using the general fund reserve was this. Because of Prop 218 and other matters, you cannot waive costs under an enterprise fund. The enterprise fund has to be paid because you can't burden the other ratepayers with additional cost beyond what it takes to serve them. So we had to find a way to pay the enterprise, although that could come out of funds, other funds that we have. And so we took a look and thought the general fund reserve is probably the best funding source for this program to then pay the enterprise fund. So essentially the city is providing this program, this forgiveness program, but we have to make the enterprise fund whole. So we thought about initial $25,000 allocation in the general fund reserve. If this program is that successful that we reach that cap, we can return to council for additional dollars out of the general fund reserve if need be. But we thought we'd start somewhere and amend that general fund reserve in the amount of $25,000. We did have some criteria that we talked about because the devil's in the details, and we know no matter what we do, there will be criticism. Without fail. So we tried to be to come up with the ones that we thought we'd be hit with first. So there are a few criteria within this program that we've put in the resolution that we would love your feedback on, whether to keep it in the resolution or to strip it out of the resolution. The first being restaurants. There are restaurants within our city that shut down completely because it was just too expensive to even try to stay open for takeout. So those restaurants we thought should be eligible for this program. There are restaurants that have been successful in takeout program throughout the months. So therefore we thought since they are open and able to turn, maybe it's not necessarily a profit, but make some dollars, whereas those restaurants that were shut were not. We were making them ineligible for the program. In other words, they were open, making some money, so then ineligible. So restaurants is one area, and we do have that currently written into the resolution. So if council would like that changed, we can take that out or amend that in the resolution. The other item that we wanted to make sure was in the resolution was delinquent accounts, because we do have some business owners, unfortunately, that are habitually late on paying their bills, and we didn't want this to at all interfere with a current delinquent account payment repayment schedule. We are very, very, I wouldn't say necessarily lenient, but we like working with our businesses and our residential customers on repayment plans. We don't like being heavy-handed. We don't like simply cutting water off or cutting utilities off. So we do have several on repayment plans. And so what's written into the resolution is businesses can still be eligible for this utility forgiveness program, even if they're on a repayment plan, even if they are delinquent. However, that delinquency is a separate issue. So we still do utility forgiveness, but that doesn't change the delinquency program that they're currently repaying. So we thought we would expressly put that in the resolution as well. And then lastly, we did want to just notate in the resolution that the business owner does have to have a current City of Reedley business license. I know it sounds small, but believe it or not, we run into that more frequently than you would imagine. So we do have that in the resolution as well, that they have a current City of Reedley business license. If they don't have a current business license, we are happy to get them up to speed with a current business license. So while we are on the subject of businesses, though, and even though it is not directly part of this program, I did want to point out to you that just this week, and this is on all of your desks in front of you, just this week, the county also put a program together for small businesses. And this is just for small businesses, 10 employees or fewer, for-profit businesses only. And they set aside $5 million from the $82 million that they received from the federal government for COVID response. This $5 million is used in $5,000 increments for businesses that are impacted by the coronavirus. So in other words, if you are a salon owner in Fresno, Clovis, or even Reedley, you can apply to get a $5,000 forgivable loan through the county in addition to whatever we may do through the city tonight. The flyer in front of you has some program documents behind it. This was put together by the Fresno County EDC, although the program is through the county. We do have this document in Spanish, Punjabi, and Hmong, and so I did provide the Spanish requirements. They're attached there, and we would be pleased to help any businesses apply for this. The chamber has gotten word out just yesterday, and so we also will be continuing to get word out on this program. For the program that we're discussing, the utility forgiveness program through the city, our intent is we will print out labels of all the businesses that have active business licenses within Reedley, and we will just directly send them a flyer with the process to apply for this program. So a little different than what the county's doing in that you have to apply for this. We have to get word out for the county's program, but our program will directly mail information to each and every business.
That's great.
But to employees under these different businesses, if they're out of a job, they can apply for unemployment, and that'll be covered.
Correct. If employees are out of a job, for the most part, because I'm sure there are some tricky little areas, but for the most part, they're eligible for unemployment. In addition, the stimulus money came to individuals, and that's why we thought we'd focus on business customers through the Reedley program, because the stimulus money up to, I think, $3,400 was coming to individuals from the federal government. Yeah.
Go ahead. I just want to say thank you for doing what you're doing, and I think it's very commendable, and I'm sure businesses will appreciate the gesture and the help. I am just very thankful for what you're doing.
Thank you.
Any questions?
Yeah, the only thing I have is, I was quick run through that, but do you have any businesses here that would fall into, let's say, that were supposed to be shut down and was trying to open again? Do we have anything that would cover somebody that's illegally operating under the state order?
Oh, now the last part that you added in added an interesting nuance to what I was thinking. We do have a business that I'll give you as an example that could have been open but chose to shut down. One of our smoke shops, for instance. They chose to shut down. Midway through, they determined they would go ahead and reopen. My thought process on that was we would make them eligible for whatever portion of the time they shut down on. Now, illegally operating may be a little more difficult for us to assess. As you know, when this started, we did have code enforcement out there really trying to make sure that we were enforcing the state's order with our businesses. And so for the most part, we believe most of them were operating appropriately. If they weren't, we took a gentle approach and went in as many times as need be to remind them that they needed to be shut. I do hear rumors about a business here and there that are open, primarily a barbershop or salon. We have sent code enforcement by and have never been able to validate or verify those claims. So unfortunately, I think that's going to be a little harder to verify, but if there's something that's just glaring, then I would say as part of the motion, maybe make that part of the program that illegally operating businesses aren't.
I guess I'm just from old school. I hate giving somebody a reward that isn't in line for it because of violating the rules that everybody else has followed. That's what I was getting at.
I hear you. Yeah. I hear you.
Maybe that ought to be part of the criteria before they are able to obtain it.
Yeah.
But other than that, I really appreciate that you guys took the time to look at finding dollars to help our businesses, because I know some of them are operating on like maybe 15% what they were operating, even on their takeout stuff, because they can't function otherwise, and that's still 15%. They can't pay their water bills, make what they were doing. So.
Well, and so let's talk specifically about that, because maybe that's a language change we need in this resolution. If you want to make all restaurants eligible, regardless of whether or not they were open, we can certainly do that, or on maybe a sliding scale, 50% or something. So we can...
Well, that's something I was thinking about. It was maybe a percentage. If a business is functioning 25% of what it was, they would be eligible for at least 75% of the funds to offset their. So I don't know if that's even feasible.
But who's going to make that determination?
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
I think that would have to be a self-attestation that we just would have to
kind of look, see what you have on that.
Yeah, I'm wondering if we just don't say
anything about it.
Restaurant, just take the restaurant part out of here. The restaurants that remain open for pickup are not eligible, and the restaurants that close completely are eligible, and just take both of those out of there and leave them in the same as all other businesses, because I know most of the restaurants, they are not making even 50% of what they were making when restaurants were open for business.
For the sake of administration, then, if that's the wish of the council, I would simply keep language in there, one sentence, that's saying restaurants, regardless of whether or not they were open or closed, are eligible. Because otherwise, I think it's going to get a little sticky trying to verify who was open and closed. But if that's something the council wants to do, we're...
And another question I had was on the dates, because the state closes down March what, something?
Mm-hmm. 13th or 19th. It was late March. Let's say March 19th for the sake of argument.
Okay, so then my question is, if the governor says we can open up, but yet you have May 2020 on here, and people open up before the end of May.
Well, my thought process was that by tonight we have been shut for almost 2 months. I think 60 days is what we've been.
So
I think 2 months worth is really the equivalent that we were considering.
Okay.
2 months worth.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you're not really...
We weren't going to split hairs
hard
on
April
that.
April and May. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. Our goal is to be as lenient as possible and only turn somebody down if there's some glaring deficiencies in an application. Yeah.
Great. Seems like a city attorney has something.
No, I was just saying.
I wanted to make sure that we...
In Section 3, I think it covers the one point that you guys were raising. Businesses that were forced to shut down to walk-in customers because they're deemed non-essential are eligible for up to 2 months. So I think that answer that answers Councilman Beck's question about illegal businesses operating. mean, they had to actually be shut down.
Yeah.
So I think the staff's going to have to determine whether or not they were actually shut down or if they maybe were operating illegally.
Gotcha.
And then Section 9 in the resolution also provides some flexibility, I think, to the city manager and the assistant city manager in administering this program. So they can do some verification and
mm-hmm.
whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that'll give them some flexibility as
yeah.
well. So.
Yeah.
Great. So we're covering. Very good. Any other questions?
In reading this whole article that you put together, I was satisfied with it. I know there's some customers that are kind of concerned about certain sections, but in baseball terms, we were up to bat last week. We got to first base today because we have a plan. Now we've got to go into second base. Now we've got to figure out how we're going to get to second base and still satisfy the businesses and the public. So I think I don't want to be too restrictive in this. At least we've started something.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Let's don't fall back a little bit and start all over again. Let's let them know that we're doing something to help them. But don't violate our procedures.
Mm.
Okay?
Definitely. And
people are going to try and skin a cat any way they can.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
And those are the ones you need to put some kind of restrictions on those. If you're caught, then you're penalized.
Mm.
So, but I just myself, I'm happy with the first.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you, Mr. Salino. Thank you.
Yeah.
And I don't think that we're gonna have some negative feedback anyway.
Oh,
when
sure.
I make everybody happy, but I like where we're going so far. I think it's a good start.
It's a start.
Yes,
that's my concern.
It's a start, and I will say while I'm standing up there, because I know we do have some people that are listening in. That again, the city of Reedley does not have a local order prohibiting businesses from opening or not opening. It is the state's order, and we are. Under obligation to enforce the state's order, or rather the businesses are under obligation to follow the state's order, I should say. And so we are still getting lots of calls from people who want us to reopen businesses. We understand that completely. Just as soon as the state lifts their order, you better believe we're going to be out there pounding the pavement telling people they can reopen.
Yes.
And particularly this past week has been unusual. I guess ladies are getting to their 6-week mark or something, but this week has been from women who are saying, my haircut is essential to me. I need my salon to reopen. And I just want to remind council that under the current order, salons and barbershops are deemed non-essential. This is one that the governor is very specific about. He believes the first case in California actually was transmitted in a nail salon. He did specifically in yesterday's briefing point out salons and say it would be a matter of only weeks until they can reopen.
That's the one I would question.
Yeah.
How can you verify it was a salon that first came out? When they're talking about all these passengers that came from China,
mm-hmm.
Europe.
I agree.
Not
yes.
pointing the finger on one business in this country.
Yeah.
That's kind of ridiculous.
I completely agree,
Mr.
Salino.
I'm sorry, but, you know, I'm a Democrat, but he's a Democrat. I've kind of questioned his attitude and his questions and his decisions.
Mm-hmm. Well, right now I was very pleased, and I suppose I should report to you had you not heard in the media, because it differs from what I reported on last Tuesday. He did change the criteria for counties to be able to reopen. And so we met with a county health officer on Monday. The county health officer had already, he said, essentially written a term paper to the governor as to why those criteria were faulty, the former criteria. They now, over the weekend, had heard from the governor that criteria is changing. And so, in fact, we still have to apply for a county variance, but the governor has stated that probably 50 of the 58 counties, if not 53 of the 58 counties, he expects should be able to meet the variance. And we should know by the end of this week or by next Monday, the county health officer has said, as to whether or not we would be able to move faster through phase two, which is reopening dine-in restaurants and then getting to a place where we can open our salons and barbershops, et cetera.
But I'm hearing that the Tulare County and Fresno County are going to be pretty tough to meet that criteria.
Yeah.
Why? Have we heard anything about what ethnic group has been hit by the hardest?
So the county is putting that data together, and in fact, it's not too far apart from Hispanic and white, although Hispanic is slightly above white when you look at the demographics. What's killing Tulare County, what is impacting Tulare County and Fresno County the most are the skilled nursing facility deaths that are occurring. And so what we're trying to do in Tulare County is trying to do is to get those skilled nursing facility cases separated out from the remaining part of the cases. Although I will tell you, because we do know that the Hispanic population cases are greater than other population cases right now, the cities of Reedley, Sanger, and Selma, just over the course of the past 2 days, have put together a radio and Spanish media campaign. We're going to split the cost so that it's a very minimal cost between us. One ad that references all three cities that will go on Radio Bilingue, Univision, all the places we could think of to hit the Spanish-speaking population. And in fact, I did have a printout of that radio ad that I'll provide to you in case you want to copy that and give that to any of your Spanish-speaking constituents. But in fact, that we are going to try to hit that population with some education, just in case they haven't gotten enough education. The other thing that is, so skilled nursing facilities, and the other thing are big employers, the processing plants, and that's what's hit Tulare County even harder. So the Reese Foods case, in Hanford, the meat processing, meat processing plant, a lot of employees from Reedley, Sanger, Selma, Dinuba in those. Sanger had a plant that hit pretty hard. So our county health representative, Ruby, who's meeting with the two chiefs and I on Wednesdays, we're going to try to do a hotspot map where we locate those employers and then where those employers' employees live, and we'll try to hit some education efforts there too. So,
do you know where the churches fit in that?
I don't, Mayor. I wish I did. What we've been told by the governor is that phase two includes the dine-in restaurants and the rest of the retail, and then phase three is where we hit the salons, spas, and churches, and potentially gyms, although gyms seem to go from stage three to stage four and back and forth. So I expect those are going to be in early summer by his indications, but I don't have any facts right now.
Okay.
You know, cities they're not following the distance mandate, and some cities are just saying, hey, we're not gonna follow that rule.
Yeah.
So I'm waiting to see what the governor is gonna do to those cities that don't abide by those laws. It seems like they're putting so much pressure on him that he's kinda giving a little bit lenient on certain things.
I think you're right. What he has said to the three counties that opened in defiance is that they risk losing all of their emergency funding,
right,
which is a big issue for counties. But I agree with you. I think he's feeling some pressure and is opening things because of that pressure. I'm particularly watching the Atwater case, though.
Yes,
because
that's interesting.
That's a case where the city issued itself a sanctuary city, and so we're waiting to see what the state is going to do about that.
I forgot what city I was reading about that said the government is going to hurt it if they don't follow those rules. He says, you've already hurt us. How much more can you do?
I definitely will keep you all updated as we roll along.
Right.
I don't have all the answers on that one, but yeah.
Well, thank you for the ones that you do have. Appreciate that.
One of the sad things is it's the classifications of them. You know, everybody, it's terrible that we're losing folks, mm-hmm. but they classify, especially out of the rest homes, mm-hmm. Nursing homes, they're classifying every death that goes out there that somebody's had COVID. That's the cause, and that's not. It's a contributing factor,
mm-hmm.
but a lot of times, some of these folks, it's not the reason. Mm-hmm. It's a contributing factor, and it is not the actual cause. So your numbers get, is it really a COVID caused, or was it just something? Because pneumonia is one of the most vicious things to elderly folk that will cause the death. Mm-hmm. And this is a respiratory problem anyway, a disease. So when you just lump it all in one basket over here, you can't make those numbers that the state has put on us to meet. X amount of fatalities from this drug or from this disease. So that keeps, every time we lose somebody in the county, it immediately is a COVID reason. Mm-hmm. So that puts us another 14 days out.
Yeah,
if I'm not mistaken, that's what they, you have to go 2 weeks, I believe it is.
He changed that over the weekend.
Oh, he did change
that over the weekend. And I think it comes down to what you have said to me for 8 years, and that is there's big lies, little lies, and statistics, right? So statistics end up being lies sometimes. So he changed that over the weekend, realizing that that statistic just wouldn't be valid.
Yeah, it's questionable because that's even starting to pop up a lot in places, because I believe it was the state of Colorado readjusted their fatality numbers and dropped it like 300 or 400 deaths out of the state. Says, no, they may have been a contributing factor, but that wasn't the cause.
Right.
So you're talking about, what, 20%? Right off the top on their issue.
Yeah.
So
no, they did drop that over the weekend, and I think the new criteria are much more reasonable. It's cases per 100,000 population. It's looking at hospitalization rate, and he's even giving an allowance for a slight increase. It can't be more than a 5% hospitalization rate, which to me goes back to the original intent, which was simply to flatten the curve, not to get rid of the virus.
Yes.
And our hospitalization rate in Fresno County is very flat. We have 150 beds available for COVID. We're only using 20 right now. So we definitely have capacity. And as long as we are under that 5% increase daily, we have capacity for a small surge if it should occur, which hopefully does not occur. Yeah.
Very good. Any, if there's no other questions, we need to ask public questions. This is open to the public. If there's anyone that has any questions or comments, right now is the time to ask, and we will ask those that are listening via Streamline. You have the opportunity to call in, and do you have that number?
I do, Mayor. Thank you very much. As she hits the play on that, if somebody is listening in, the live stream has a 60-second delay. Therefore, you'll hear a 60-second silence as we wait for any potential phone calls. The number to call in is 637-4200, extension 290.
Very good. We had no callers. We'd like to open up for the approval of these items. So do we have a motion?
Motion.
I'll second it with removing the restaurants that remained open for pickup, to take that out.
Okay, so I'll clarify that all restaurants, regardless of whether or not they were closed or open, are eligible. Thank you.
Councilmember Beck?
Yes.
Councilmember Fast?
Yes.
Councilmember Cellino?
I would say no.
Mayor Pignon?
Yes. Very good. We move on to our workshops. Continue to propose fiscal year 2020-21 budget. And we continue on with Nicole.
Thank you very much. My opening comments will be very brief. As you know, last Tuesday we began our budget workshops, which are very much open to the public, and we encourage the public's input, their concerns, their comments. We specifically do budget workshops so that it can be less formal and less imposing for our public as they go through this very large document. Cities are complex, and so it does require a lot of documents within this budget to be able to be as transparent as possible on how we spend the public's dollars. We did do a lot this year to try to streamline documentation and to make the document even more readable. So if any members of the public who are listening wish to get a sort of a personal walkthrough of the budget, I am more than happy to do so. All they need to do is call City Hall and we can arrange to meet with them and walk through. And again, if our listening public has any comments or questions or concerns, even criticisms, we welcome those. We want to be completely transparent and open to the public. I do want to point out that customarily when the council gets the proposed budgets, we include the master salary table in the budget. That was not included in this year's proposed budget, and there is a very distinct reason for that, and I neglected to tell the council that last week, and so I appreciate Mr. Beck asking me the question today because it reminded me to inform you as to why the master salary table is not in the proposed budget. And that is, as opposed to the last couple of years where we have had closed MOUs, we've known what the impact of negotiations would be on master salary table and salary resolutions. This year we are in negotiations with both units, and so we do not have knowledge of how that master salary table is going to be impacted, if at all. So right now, the master salary table that I placed on your credenza there is the existing master salary table that was adopted that is currently in place. I will tell you that since the administration is not asking for any additional positions for next year, nor is it asking for any position to be moved on the salary table, the only thing that we know for sure right now that differs in the master salary table for next year is that part-time is impacted by the minimum wage increase, and so that's something that will happen simply because of state law. So right now, this master salary table represents the best of what we know. When we finish negotiations, this master salary table may look different depending on negotiations. And so our intent is that tonight we're going to do the Parks and Recreation, we're going to do engineering, and we're going to do public works. Next Tuesday night, we'll do police, we'll do fire. The following council meeting, which is a regular council meeting, we're going to have a closed session to update the council on where we are with negotiations. And then on the 23rd of June, we'll bring back the budget with the master salary table and the salary resolution for adoption. We always do put all those documents together for adoption. We hope that it will also include MOUs for adoption, but that's going to be dependent on how negotiations continue to go. If you have any questions on that before I turn this over to Paul? All right. In that case, not Paul, I'm sorry. I'm turning it over to Sarah. We'll get a repeat of your great presentation from last week. We will turn this over to Community Services for her departmental presentation.
All right. Good evening, Mayor and members of the council. It is my pleasure to kick off the first presentation this evening with Community Services 2020-21 proposed budget. So the Community Services Department encompasses a variety of divisions and programs with the primary goal to serve the entire community. The main focus is to provide services at an affordable price and outstanding customer services to all of our residents here in Reedley. So through our organizational chart, this breaks down the divisions within the Community Services Department. We are responsible for two commissions, the Community Services Commission and the Airport Commission. You can see the different staffing levels that we have and the divisions underneath those people. Within those divisions, we have 6 full-time employees, 4 part-time year-round employees. Within our recreation programs, we hire 83 seasonal employees, and then sprinkled out throughout the senior department, youth sports, and special events, we recruit, train, and retain 285 volunteers. So that's one of the unique things about community services, that we are very heavily dependent on seasoned employees and volunteers. They are the faces of our programs. We invest a lot of time and effort in them because basically they are the ones that make us successful in what we offer to the community. So here are the different accounts the community services is responsible for. So within the general fund, another unique aspect about community services is the revenue that we generate through our programs, through our rental fees, through donations and grants that we work with, really helps offset the cost and the impact that we have within the general fund. I am very happy to see the airport numbers for next fiscal year. We are in a better position than we have been for the past few years. There's two main factors to that. One of it, if you recall, last year we restructured the payback loan from the hangar development to cut that in half. So that has helped us with our operating budget. The main factor behind that was to position ourselves for the upcoming capital improvement projects that we have anticipated at the airport. We are going to have larger matches for the next 4 to 5 years, so we wanted to prepare for that. Also is just the $30,000 that we're receiving through the CARES Act. That is a huge impact on our operating budget at the airport in helping us being able to maintain and pay for expenses during this time. The senior nutrition program, though it came to a screeching halt in March because of COVID, our agreement for this year was terminated because all of our participants who would come to the center are now receiving homebound meals. We have assumed that we will operate in a normal capacity going into next fiscal year. We haven't been given a date yet. Of course, it's all dependent on when it's safe for the seniors to come out and gather again, but that will be adjusted once we have more information and know when those contracts will be put back in place. I've also represented the park bond up there. So in 2018, Proposition 68 was passed, the park bond, and part of that was per capita funds that each city is going to receive. So we're hoping to receive those this fiscal year. We're anticipating $200,000. And so there is one project that's been identified in the budget, so I'll talk about that as we move along. So I wanted to go right into the airport project because I spoke of it already. We did get some more exciting news. So through the CARES Act, next year, the FAA, they are going to cover the city match. So that is a benefit to us in the amount of just over $9,600. So again, something that's going to impact our enterprise account and help keep us in a healthy operating manner. So after we get through this next year with the design grant, then we're going to go into the construction of the apron. This is a huge project. You've heard me talk about just the deterioration of that space, the pavement. There's huge cracks in it, debris that is becoming alarming to planes. So over the next 4 years will be the construction of that area. We're also going to deal with two other concerns, one being some drainage issues that were identified some years ago. It's getting wrapped into this project. And then also we'll take consideration of the taxiway in about 3 years because the FAA does give priorities to runways and taxiways. So they were happy to see that we're going to check kind of the condition of the taxiway in about 3 years.
Sarah, could I ask you a question on the airport?
Mm-hmm.
We have pilots that travel around different cities and also out of state. And when they go to certain airports, if they're going to stay there a day or so, or if they're going to do some traveling for the day, there's always a vehicle that they can rent or use. And some of the pilots have said, why can't we do that? Mm-hmm. Is it a liability? Or that would prohibit the city really from having a vehicle for people that are out of the state or out of the city that want to come in to really to tour or visit and would like to have a vehicle? What would prevent the city from having one?
So one, we're a smaller airport. I know some of the larger ones, the FBO, will drive people around or get them to their destination. We do have the taxi services in town that we have shared with people. Also, Enterprise within Dinuba, that is another place that I've told people they are able to get a means of transportation. I think it's just one, having the manpower to do it, and we're such a small operation that I feel like the resources we have been able to service the people that need it.
To Bishop. Mm. And landed there, and I needed to have a taxi. Here comes a Rolls Royce.
Oh, wow.
Nice.
And myself driving around here in the Rolls Royce at the park. That was pretty impressive. Okay, well, I had to ask that question. So.
Okay.
All right.
Thank you. So accomplishments out at the airport. So we are in the process of getting the new point of sale machine out there. That is going to be a huge upgrade for us in being able to continue to generate the revenue through the fuel sales. I've talked about the $30,000 we're anticipating to receive. Also, we renegotiated the five-year contract with the BMX. And then labeled the tie-down area. The reason I put this on there is for the last few years, our hangars have been full. We have no space that we can rent out for people that inquire about getting a hangar. So we've just recently seen an increase of interest in our tie-down areas. Hmm. If people need a place to park a plane, now they're asking us about that space. Before then, we haven't had a problem. We tell someone, yep, go park out there. Well, now that we've had more interest, we've actually got a system. So we've labeled all the areas. We've identified where the planes that are existing or out there, told them where their space is. So like last week, we had someone walk in the door. Now we can say, go to E3, that is your spot. So anyways, we're just managing it more effectively. And I definitely think there's some room opportunity for some revenue coming from our tie down area as people are just desperate for space. And the last one, though it seems little, we had an Eagle Scout who needed a project. And so if you have been out to our airport barbecue, you know those wooden tables that we have that have splinters coming out. There were holes in them. So I said, how about you refurbish our tables? The commissioners were just excited, and you see a picture of it. He did a beautiful job, got it done before our barbecue. Fortunately, we had to cancel. But now we have beautiful sitting areas out at the airport that just makes a big difference in that space. Mm-hmm. Goals for next year. So we did have to cancel the RC event, but we have established a relationship and partnership there. So they are already considering doing their event at our airport next Memorial Day. So we're excited about that. We don't think they're going to do anything between now and then, but definitely next Memorial Day, we hope to see that big event out there for 4 days. And then staff is also working on an RFP for hangar development. So I wanted to share, within the next 9 years, we are going to have three of our long-term land leases expiring in 24, 26, and 29. Those folks that invested in the airport 25 years ago, those agreements are coming to expiration. What happens at that time is those hangars come back to the city. So we are able to rent those out. So looking into the future, we hope to, or plan to put out an RFP this year so that we can get some interest in building out our next hangars that have already been identified in our airport master plan. So some accomplishments for the administration, as I shared, that we have 6 full-time employees within community services. Over this last fiscal year, we have recruited, hired, and trained 3 of those positions. So there was a little turnover in our department, but we truly feel like we picked the right people, and they are doing a phenomenal job. It was exciting to see the basketball court finished at Camacho Park, brought some life into that space and just a new amenity that the families can enjoy in. And also, what seems like a little small thing had a huge impact. We know how busy Citizens Park is. And so getting off that rubber surface that was starting to fail, we just heard a lot of compliments about that. So just again, beautifying a space. Good. So goals going into next year. So we have talked about the foundation received a donation in memory of Pam Melville for $100,000. So the funder asked that that money be spent on a project in Trimble Park. So we are currently underway of getting 5 shade canopies put up in that space.
Great.
It looks like we're going to have about $30,000 left, and the funder has agreed to invest it in the playground equipment there. So we're hoping that we can finish both those projects with this one donation in this fiscal year. And then we received the sad news that we didn't get the funding for Camacho Park rehabilitation. Staff did talk to the state grant office. They identified some of the weaknesses within our application, and so we will be revising some of those areas and resubmitting when the next round of funding comes back up. Still feel like that's the most highest priority project.
So I have a question.
Yeah.
At the Camacho Park, was that to do the ramp? Is that
a ramp was a piece of it. There was also upgrading the whole lighting system to a more modernized one, being able to control the lights, the ramp, a walking trail, a new restroom, concession stand. So kind of a whole overhaul of the park.
Okay.
And then security lighting around the park and dealing with the ADA parking in front.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
What were some of the problems that we didn't meet that grant?
So one of it was they said our medium household medium in that area and space as far as park space in that area wasn't as big a need as they saw across the state. So that was one area that knocked us down. Though we met it in both of those areas across the board, we didn't have other people were in more need. So that was one area. Being able to, the water circulation and drought tolerant was very small part of our application. So they gave us some suggestions of how we can kind of ramp that part up. As far as the project itself, they did fund rehabilitations because that was my question. You know, we don't have new park space that qualifies for this funding. Mm-hmm. And she said, no, it was pretty spread out between rehabilitation and then new park space. I also have other notes. Those are the two that stuck out the most. Oh, and being able to use volunteers through the project, because we did put in an application to the Corps and they weren't interested in that project. So how else could we get volunteers involved through the construction phase? So some of those are just challenges we may not be able to do, but definitely I made note of it, and we will go into more detail on the next application of why we can't do it, or maybe be more creative of things that we can do.
That agency that makes the final decision, do they come in and review?
In this particular one, they said they did site visits. They did not contact staff to do it with them. In the past, like when we did Mueller Park, I remember meeting with that state agent and walking around and talking about what was going to happen. In this particular case, they said if they need to do a site visit, they will do it. Hmm. Mm-hmm. For our building maintenance, last year Community Services took over the building maintenance within the government building. So that's here at City Hall, the fire department, and the police department. An accomplishment over this last year was inventorying the 33 units amongst those three buildings, the community center and the opera house. So that is all of our HVAC units. And then we have two swamp heater cooling units. So as you know, we've replaced six of those. We brought that to the council at mid-year. So the fresh air that you're feeling is one of the new units that was finished today. So we're excited to be able to track that better. Now we know the year of the units, any maintenance and money we've had to put into the units. We have them on an annual program to get service. So as we have funding available and need to replace some of these older units, then we can better target in on where we need to concentrate on doing that. We are in the process of doing the upgrade to the parking lot lights at the community center. As you know, that's one of the heaviest used city facilities within the city. And so we are upgrading it to LED lighting. We think this will make the building pop. It'll give us better security. It'll really just bring a fresh look to the outside environment. About 6 months ago, there was a need within the wastewater treatment plant for custodial services. So the building maintenance has taken on that responsibility, and we anticipate continuing that into the next fiscal year. And as we continue to chip away at the ADA transition plan the city has, this past year's project was actually putting in an automatic door at the senior center. So on the side from the parking lot, now they just push a button and it opens for them. They are very appreciative, and it was a nice upgrade to use that funding for this past year. Goals going into next year, I'm just going to focus on the project. So within the budget, we have $50,000 for maintenance repairs. The three things we plan to do with that is to fix the roof at the community center. We've noticed leaking over the last year and a half. And so we are 3 months away from our 15-year warranty. And so we had the company come out. The majority of the repairs fall underneath that warranty. But there is some stuff, I know. Whew. Yeah. There is some stuff that is just over time, acts of God with hail and different things. So we are going to have a price tag to just get it all done at one time, hoping it'll extend the life of the roof for about 15 more years. So that's one of the projects. The second project is the walk-in at the Opera House. So as you know, we replaced the one at the community center. The one at the Opera House is just as old. The freezer portion of that walk-in has not worked for many years. So the intention of picking this project is one, the efficiency. It's another high-ticket item with within the Opera House that we can go ahead and upgrade and repair to help with lowering, hopefully, the city's subsidy to the building by allowing it to just run more effectively. And the last one is there's a restroom at the police department that we thought we were going to be able to fix within this fiscal year. It has a bigger drain situation than we had anticipated, so we are going to use this funding to go ahead and repair that. $11,000 you will see underneath the community center. Those are repairs to deal with safety things that we've identified that we just feel like are to the point we need to take care of. So within the seniors and recreation, I lumped these together because I felt like their accomplishments and goals really just kind of seem together. So accomplishments is really just seeing some new programs implemented. I'm really excited about the enthusiasm my staff has and just the ideas that they are bringing forward with new program ideas, especially within the senior center. So we have identified 5 trips that we hope to take over this next year, hopefully as things start to loosen up and get better. We brought back the senior casino trips, which, as you know, get sold out very quickly. We also have a lot more afternoon activities happening there in the senior room. So we have just, because of this, seen an increase in our lunch program. So we were on track to actually get our full funding back this year, because last year we know our numbers dipped, and so we didn't get our full funding from FMAAA. We were on track to get that back. So we're hopeful with the things that our senior coordinator has been doing during this time through her care packages, through her social calls, to just keep that connection so that when we do open up, they just come right back to us. In March, as you know, our traditional programs kind of ceased. This was one of our busiest times of year. Our youth baseball, unfortunately, had to get canceled. Some of our big events, our Easter camp. This is just a busy time of year for us. So staff got together and said, since we can't do the traditional programs, what are we going to do during this time? And so we just embraced this Facebook Connect campaign. And what that has done is just brought some positivity. It's kept us connected with the public. It's really increased our followers. So as we kind of come out of this, we are very hopeful that we can now use this as one of our main forms of advertising, because we have so many people that are just interested in what we are posting and what we are doing. Goals for the next year is to continue to work on the senior lunch participation, and then these last two go together. So with kind of this turnover and having new staff, I think there's an opportunity to kind of pave out what the next few years look like for our programs. So we've done a lot of the same programs year after year. So what can we be doing different? What times of year can we be offering different things? So we are over this year going to do a lot of research, a lot of surveying, a lot of talking to people to kind of map out where do we go from here and where do we see the needs for the future. A big part of that is sustainability through our fees, being mindful of what it costs to do stuff, keeping that affordable, but not feeling like everything needs to be for free. There's a diverse population here. There's some things that we can definitely charge a minimal fee for with a healthy balance of some of our service programs that are free. How do we balance that out a little bit better? So challenges for next year. So I know the impact post-COVID is going to affect our programs. They're going to look different. We're going to have to do our tiny top football in the fall if we have it a little bit different. We're going to have to come up with certain procedures and protocols. We're already working on that for aquatics. So I will let you know we are talking about having a 4-week aquatic session in July. We're working through that. We need to go back to the district with what we plan to do, how we plan to do that safely, and how we plan to stay within the guidelines. We are also opening up an essential kids camp in June. So we're working on those guidelines too, because part of this is just us not knowing it, but we need to train our staff so that they can keep the kids that are participating safe. So I see that really with all of our programs as we come out of this. What are we going to do? How are we going to communicate that so we make sure the parents come back and participate because they feel safe with what we are doing? Lack of gym space continues to be a concern as the district just becomes busier. You know, we're dependent on Reed and Grant to be able to have practices and games. What we have done is during those two seasons, we freed up the community center on Monday and Wednesday nights, so some of our practices have shifted back to us. And then we also invested in equipment that we need, a net and different things, because I feel like if we're going to offer these programs, we need to make sure we have adequate space for them to practice. Lack of lighted field spaces isn't new to anybody. As we talk about the build out of the sports park, that will help with that. We are managing it effectively. We still meet with groups. We still make sure everyone's playing nice. The time is spread out amongst us. But of course, leagues are limited. And then as they continue to grow, as we continue to grow, this is just going to continue to be an area that we need to address.
Can I ask a question on that field space issue? Has there been any discussion with Kings Canyon Unified to open up the fields that they have that are lighted? I know there's like football fields that they're not used in the, probably in the winter and spring for sure. Baseball fields that are lighted that, you know, our city, our people have spent money to light those fields. And I think we should have access to those as a public.
I know some of the other leagues do, like little league practices on some of the field. The youth football does. The city hasn't intruded on those spaces. We've been able to do it in our parks, but it's definitely a point of conversation we can have. Minimum wage, so city manager referred to this. We do have two more dollar increases. In January, we will go to 14. The January after that, we will go to 15. So that continues to impact our programs. And just the volunteer recruitment, needing 285 people, the ability to get people that can pass our background check, that have knowledge in what we need them to, be able to train them. You know, a lot of our volunteer positions now require some kind of certification. To be in the senior center doing the food program, you have to have the food handler certificate. Some of them are trained in CPR and first aid. Our coaches now have to be concussion certified. So just as these things continue to load on to coaches in other volunteer capacities, it just makes it harder to recruit those people. So that is all I have. I would be happy to answer any questions that you may have.
What, you know, there's been talk about in certain school districts thinking maybe we might go to school during the summertime to make up for lost time. If that would happen with Kings Canyon, what kind of effect it would have to our programs?
So we are waiting to hear what the district is going to decide to do for their summer program. There's been some talks of possibly something in July, but nothing has been firmly decided yet. So we, if you recall, probably about 2-3 months ago, I think right before COVID hit, we had brought forward the summer agreement. And so we already have that in place. The district knows that. So as soon as they decide on if they're going to do something, we have the agreement. We would just have to revise the budget. So we're already, my concern with that is the longer we wait, we're going to start to lose staff. And we're seeing that within our seasonal people, too, not knowing if we're going to have an aquatics program. Our guards are getting jobs at Walmart, Target, other places that are open. I already know of three of our after-school people that have gotten jobs, packing house, different places. And so as this kind of drags on, there's this concern about these people that we've invested all this time in losing them because of the uncertainty of what's going to happen. So I've been very transparent with our staff. I've talked to them. As soon as we know, you'll know. And hopefully we get an answer sooner than later. I will share some good news I got today that I haven't even shared yet around, but Save the Children at Washington is going to do a virtual summer program. So what they are going to do is purchase three different kits for 120 students. Those are going to be distributed every 2 weeks. We're going to have four of our after-school staff that manage that, that call the families, that does some Zoom times with the kids. There's actual workbook with that. So we are going to have a small piece right after school gets out, and then wait and see what happens with an actual in-person program in July.
Great.
Yeah.
That is good news.
That is good news. I was excited to get that news.
Sarah, you were speaking of lighted fields. Where do we stand on grants for the sports park?
So the only one that I have on my radar that the state office shared with me as I was whining about the sports park doesn't qualify is there's a regional park grant that will be coming out. Okay. So the city cannot be the lead, a nonprofit. And so I've already set that seed with the foundation about can we partner to go after that. So now we're just waiting for the guidelines. That is the only funding that I'm aware of at this time.
Yeah, I was afraid because of this. there was going to be a lot of cutback on the grants anyway.
Could be. So, yeah, because we haven't even heard about the next round of funding for Camacho, and we anticipated those being due in August. So we'll have to wait and see.
Yeah, whenever that sports park is completed, you're going to realize an awful lot of revenue that's going to come into the city. Because of what can be different sports that can be put out there, tournaments or whatever. It's amazing.
I had a question on the Dial-A-Ride. I know Dial-A-Ride in the past has been under the community center guidance or whatever. Can you give me a little bit of update how the new contractor's doing there? And just a reminder of the savings that we received because of the Dial-A-Ride program changing to that new contractor.
The most recent conversation I had with MV was related to their staff needing a safe place to use the restroom because of everything being closed down. So that is the only real update I've gotten. I haven't talked to them about the numbers or different things, but I will definitely reach out to them, Mary, and see if they can provide us a report so that we can share with you that information as far as how are they doing. I know they're still in operations. We see their people come by and be able to utilize our facilities. But as far as their numbers and how this has impacted them and how their year has gone, I can get that information and provide it to you guys.
Have you had any people call and give confirmation or give complaints of how the service is?
A couple of complaints that I have passed on, and basically it was the waiting time.
Okay.
That just an extensive waiting time.
Okay.
Yeah, I believe less drivers are running than when we had it. Part of that is driven by the ridership.
Sure.
So it's kind of that double-edged sword. You need the riders, but then the riders get frustrated, and so then you lose the drivers. So beyond that, I don't have any more information, but I will definitely get it for you.
Okay, and Paul might have that number of how much we saved. You can answer that later.
I'm sorry. Did you have another question, Mary?
Yeah, I had another question. On the department budget summary, and this might be another Paul question, I'm not sure. The income, it says community services and then says use of money and property. What is that category? What income does that category include? On page 170?
Yeah.
The third item there on the top? Because it's $180,000 for the community center, but then I saw it multiple places as I was going through these budgets. I'm just curious what that is. Just a general.
Sure. I have to look up the official definition from the Governmental Accounting Standards Board, but that would include lease revenue. Any type of situation where we have a contract where somebody's paying us dollars for use of our property,
like rentals,
that sort of
renting
thing,
the community
right?
Okay.
So that could be, now this is just for all funds, so that could be the airport. So that, you know, that would be a big chunk of the revenue there, mm-hmm. because that the airport is primarily supported by the folks who are using it. So like the hangar rentals, that sort of thing. And then again, like the Opera House, the BMX agreement, those sorts of things. So if you were to add all those up, I know it looks like a lot of money, mm-hmm. but when you start factoring in all of those different revenue streams, that's how you get to that number.
Yeah.
So.
Okay. And then probably a question for Sarah. On the community center salaries and wages, do you have any plans to cut back on any salaries due to the COVID, because we aren't really providing much services? The community center is pretty much closed.
So as far as our seasonal staff with the programs counseling, they, of course, we are not using them at this time. For our preschool program, I'll use that as an example. Since that program has been canceled, we also, too, are not using those staff. The staff that we have kept on are the operations in the office, because we are still doing taxi script. We still get phone calls. We still are functioning in the office capacity. Also, our building maintenance. So their responsibilities have really been heightened through this, through the sanitation and making sure that we're taking care of these facilities and giving our employees a safe place to work. So to answer your question in short, right now, the seasonal employees, yes. The programs that have been affected, unfortunately, we don't have work for them and won't bring them back until we start to see programs opening back up. At this point, we've kept the office staff in its whole. One thing that's kind of helped us, I guess, in this is the administrative assistant went out on leave right before COVID happened. Mm-hmm. She has been out this whole time. And so my person who works the front office, we had already put her in with additional responsibilities to help us out while the administrative assistant was gone. Mm-hmm. The administrative assistant is coming back on Thursday, kind of the timing where we're gearing back up and talking about starting things in June. So blessings through everything. She got to stay home and be safe with her baby and feel good about that. And it gave us an opportunity to keep some employees working where we might have looked at the equation a little bit different. I don't know. But it all worked out.
Okay. Thank you, Sarah.
You're welcome.
Sir, I just was wondering, the kids camp that's coming up, when is that going to be?
So we are going to start that June 8th. So we're focusing on city employees. So as employees are continuing to stay busy and there's no kind of sight of programs opening yet in June, we feel like we're to the point that it would really help to have a safe place for kids to go. We've also extended this a little bit to the district. So I'm waiting to hear back from them if they have any employees that are in a need to be able to do this. Mm-hmm. But we're going to start it off small because then we got to get our procedures in place. Mm-hmm. There's only 10 kids that can be in a space. Mm-hmm. We have to limit their interaction with people. So anyways, right out the gate, we don't want to open it up and run into problems. We want to make sure we do this with the mindset of we need to be good at what we're doing before we start looking at extending further.
And if I could just add, because I know to our public it's going to sound odd that we're going to open a daycare for our employees, but if you'll recall, a few weeks ago the governor specifically came out to talk about the need for essential workers to have daycare facilities given that other daycare facilities are closed. Specifically was commenting on cities being able to provide something for their employees. Mm-hmm. We do have a couple of employees who have had to be out because of childcare issues, and under the federal FFCRA law that was created to deal with COVID, those employees can have up to 10 to 12 weeks of leave for childcare issues. So it's very important for us, if we can get childcare handled, those employees can come back and work those essential jobs.
Yes. Yeah. And just a note on that childcare. My husband's on the Chapter 1 school board, and they're going to be opening on June 1st.
Good. That's very good.
So with with a lot more problems or issues that they have to deal with, mm-hmm. than probably the older kids. But yeah, it's going to be a different world.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately.
Yep. I did want to answer the question into what this next 3 to 6 months looks like, moving past COVID and kind of getting programs back. So I already talked about kind of the procedures that we're putting in place. So taking it program by program, reviewing what the CDC is saying safe operating practices should be and start to put our own procedures in place. I already shared about the virtual summer program we're going to have, the swim lessons that we're trying to work through. I will share that I told the district we are not looking at doing recreation swim or family nights. I think that opens us up for bigger groups of people, and we're just not ready for that yet. So our focus will be swim instructions in the morning and the afternoons and lap swim, because that's an individual type of activity. Mm-hmm. Water aerobics, we're not sure yet. Our instructor needs to get certified, and we haven't had any courses. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be another interesting piece of this. People who thought that they would get certified as lifeguards are now going to struggle to try to get that certification. Mm-hmm. We stay very very connected to our professional organization, so I am on a Zoom call every week listening to what other cities are doing. We have been very gracious about sharing our information. So just as I was starting to work on these camp procedures, somebody shot one out this morning, and I thought, whoa, there we go. So there's just been a lot of sharing, kind of stealing ideas, talking things through. So we are definitely just staying in tune and in touch with that as we start to talk about youth sports, special events, some of those other things.
Great. No sense in reinventing wheels, right?
Yes, exactly.
Yes,
yeah.
Very good.
And I did have some people call us about all of our virtual programs. So I feel like here in the Valley, we're kind of on the cutting edge of things.
Great.
So,
Nothing wrong with that.
Which is kind of exciting.
That's
great.
Girl.
It is.
Any other questions from the council? Very good. So we need to have questions from the public or not? That's right. Very good. We move on to engineering. We wait to hear from Mary Lou. Thank you.
Good evening, Mayor, members of the council. My name is Mary Lou Morales. I'm the city engineer, and I'm going to be speaking a little bit about our engineering budget for fiscal year 2021. Wanted to start off a little bit with the engineering department responsibilities. We are in charge of all of the city's capital projects, plans, design, manage the construction of them, including the various funding items associated with each. We are responsible for all encroachment permits and inspections within the city's right-of-way. We review, approve, and inspect all the projects requiring encroachment permits. We also review development projects and perform the plan checks on those. We update, we maintain and manage all of the city standards and plans. We update them to make sure we're in compliance with all federal and state regulations. We're also in charge of the topographic mapping within town. We have a contract surveyor that we coordinate all of that with, but this includes zoning maps, street maps, parcel maps, final maps, lot line adjustments, lot mergers, and all of that. We also update and keep our zoning maps, street maps, and utility plats up to date based on new projects and any improvements that we do. We also coordinate the landscape, lighting, and maintenance district, annual reports, and annexation. Now I'm going to go into a bunch of the projects we've been working on this year, and some of them have overlapped a little bit due to right-of-way and whatnot. This year was majorly focused on design, and due to the turnover in the city engineer, you know, some of the projects have been a little bit delayed in the construction. So most of these projects will be in construction this next fiscal year. So Manning Avenue Phase 1, northeast of the railroad tracks to Frankwood Avenue, completed design. We're working right now with Caltrans to get the right-of-way certification and then authorization for construction. So we're doing sewer, water, and then some curb and gutter, some sidewalk pavement, and the construction cost for this is almost $2.5 million, a combination of an STBG grant, our Measure C match for that, water enterprise and wastewater enterprise funds. Next one is the CDBG project, Button Willow Widening, Myrtle Avenue to North Avenue. That project we just opened bids on, so we'll be starting construction, and next week I'll be bringing forward the project for award. This was a project that council wanted us to proceed with, and I think it's going to be great and definitely allow Monta Vista to be constructed. Construction cost for this is based off of our new bids that came in is $525,000, a combination of CDBG, Measure C, and Water Enterprise funds. We also have the roadway safety signing audit. This was an HSIP grant that we were awarded, and it's analyzing all of the existing signage on our major arterial roads, and will be approximately 433 signs will be either relocated, removed, replaced, and then we will have some minor traffic striping. The next project is I Street Rehabilitation. This project was originally going to be phased. As you know, I came recently to council to combine that project. So it'll be from Reed Avenue to Dinuba. I think this will be a great project because that street is really traveled a lot. Construction costs will be approximately $1.2 million, a combination of SB1, Measure C, and VIF. We are anticipating finishing design this fall and winter, and then going out to bid first thing next year, and then in the spring constructing that. The Royal Valley parking lot, that is currently under construction. That has been funny. seems like every time we're going to start on that project, it rains. So we are hoping that construction will be done this year. Approximate construction costs are $402,000, and that's through RDA bond funds. The East Avenue sidewalk project from August Avenue to Lincoln Avenue on the east side of the roadway, we completed design, and right now we're getting authorization for construction through Caltrans. The construction cost is approximately $427,000, and that was awarded through a CMAC grant and also our Measure C local match. A couple other sidewalk projects that we are currently under design on are the Reed Avenue sidewalks from I Street to 8th. And then that was our CMAC Lifeline funds, and we had Measure C local match, $121,000 for construction. And then Manning Avenue sidewalks, Frankwood to Reed Avenue on the north side of the roadway. That'll be shortly after we complete Manning Phase 1. There wasn't as much funding, so we went after using Lifeline funds to fill in the sidewalk that we aren't going to be doing with a Phase 1 project. Construction costs are approximately $230,000. And then the Olson Avenue wastewater line upgrade, the design was completed on that project, so we'll be upsizing and replacing portions of it, and construction costs approximately $2.85 million with Wastewater Enterprise. And then we also had a lot of development projects this year, which is really great for the city. We haven't seen development in, according to others, approximately like 10 years. So this will be really good. Monta Vista Estates, we're under plan review and approval right now. And we'll be doing the inspections during construction. Frankwood Commons, we are doing the review on all those plans. Self-help, we are doing inspections right now. D.R. Horton is going to be purchasing the second phase and third phase of Reed Aspen track. So we're reviewing all of that right now, and hopefully they'll be starting construction next year and we'll be doing inspections. Almond Grove, right now we're performing inspections and coordinating all of that. Rancho Vista, we did plan and map review and approvals. Some more development projects. We're currently doing inspections on Dopkins Funeral Home, Reed Lee Cemetery expansion. That is going to be starting up soon, putting in the storm drain and curb gutter and sidewalk. So we are coordinating inspections on that project. UHC, which was completed, we did all of the off-site inspections. And then we've also had other minor plan reviews, inspections, and coordinating all of that. And then this coming year, for fiscal year 2021, we were awarded the STBG grant for Manning Avenue Phase 3 from Columbia to Buttonwillow. And then I also wanted to let you know, I came to you guys regarding the CMAC grant for the various alleys, and we were awarded that. So yeah, we'll be able to reconstruct 9 alleys that are in very bad shape. So I am very excited for that project. So we'll be designing it this coming year, and then 2021, and then 21-22 doing construction. Also, we plan on doing a lot of project management and inspections on projects next fiscal year for all of our federal projects under construction. We'll have to coordinate all of that and do the various items necessary, reimbursements and whatnot. We'll have multiple developments that have to coordinate with and inspect. And then also any citywide projects, you know, a resident comes in and wants to build a driveway or whatnot, we'll also be inspecting those and coordinating that.
Question here?
Yeah.
That CMAC for alley work, is this, can you apply for these grants every year?
Every 2 years. Yes. So the way the Fresno COG gets money for STBG, which you can use pretty much anywhere. And then CMAQ is more congestion mitigation air quality, I believe is the acronym. And so it's reducing PM10 particles in 2.5. So a lot of the alleys that have dirt or whatnot or gravel, my goal is to every 2 years go after more alleys to make sure that we're covering the ones that are dilapidated. But you can't do any repairs. We can't do pothole repairs or anything of that nature with the CMAQ dollars. It's only ones that are in dirt or gravel. That's how that money. Yeah. Uh-huh. Oh, so I just wanted to show you, this is kind of a map of all over town where we're doing, whether it's review the developments that we're inspecting or reviewing plans or different street projects. So the engineering department has been very busy and all over town. So just wanted to show you guys that. So we have definitely have a lot of projects going on, but wanted to kind of bring you back to our PCI. Back in 2016, we did have a pavement management plan done, and we also did an update this past year. As you can see, our PCI remained the same overall, but as you can see, our arterials went up because a lot of our grants, we've been trying to go after arterials. Oh, sorry. And then the collectors, though, have gone down slightly. Residential have gone down slightly, and our alleys have gone down. So even though our arterials are going up, our numbers on our other streets are going down. And thankfully, we are trying to go after grants to fix most of our roads. Here's a little map for 5-year projections, though. This doesn't account, if you see the orange one, is our current budget, which only guaranteed funds we get are Measure C and SB1. So if we just use Measure C and SB1, in 5 years, our PCI will go down to 47. If we, to maintain our current PCI, we need approximately $5.3 million. To increase it about 5, would need $8.1 million, and then if we wanted to increase it all the way to 83 in 5 years, the first year would be approximately $55 million, and each year after that would be 8.5. So even though we are really going after a lot of our projects and trying to get grants, every dollar that we can use towards our streets to maintain them and improve them is crucial. So a little bit about our budget expenditures. Federal, state funds, a little over $3 million. Measure C, $600,000. CDBG, $400,000. SB1, $940,000. So a total of almost $5 million this coming fiscal year. Our revenues projected at Measure C, $718,000. CDBG, $406,000. SB1, $500,000. And you'll notice a little bit of a difference between our revenues and expenditures. And that difference is the SB1 dollars that we received this fiscal year that we didn't use in order to combine it to do a larger project. So that was that difference. For engineering department operational expenses, personnel, $511,000, professional contract services, $70,000, operational expenses, $22.5. And the professional / contract services is a little bit higher since we are planning on having multiple projects this coming year. We might have to, because we only have 4 staff and 3 of those would be doing some of the inspections, we might have to hire an outside firm to do some of the inspections on those projects. So that money would be, we would be getting that through the inspection fees that we charge out to the developer. So it would be offset.
So I have a question.
Yes.
On your salaries, I noticed in your budget summary that your salaries were about $20,000 less than what was estimated that we're spending this year. And I see that you don't have any staff changes. So do you know why that's less?
I can guess because we had a few months without John. No? Okay, sorry.
No, it actually has to do with the way that expenses are
call. Okay. Do you want to take that for just a minute to explain?
That was this year.
There's no staffing changes, no right. demotions, no anything like that.
Right. So it's part of the budget. By the way, that's a great question with that because those numbers are shifting a little bit. So part of the budget rollout was making sure that we're only charging the funds that are getting benefit of the services. So that's what we've continued to do. So the engineering has been pulled out of some of the enterprise funds and put back in the general fund where they can get reimbursed for project eligible costs. So we've continued to do that. So for instance, solid waste and wastewater haven't gotten as much benefit this year or this last year. So we've actually pulled those back out of those funds.
Yeah, you recall when we brought in the new auditor, there were many changes that they had recommended we make. And so it's been a while since we talked about that.
Okay. Okay. And, well, I just had some comments, so maybe I'll wait till you're done with your presentation.
Okay. inspections fees have budgeted $60,000. Those are a little conservative. We do have a lot of developments that are projected this coming year. With COVID-19, we're not exactly sure which ones will come through or not, so a little bit more conservative on that. Staff time reimbursement for federal grants, $40,000, and staff time reimbursement for Measure C, $20,000. I am really trying to have more of our staff design some of the projects so we can keep that money in-house and pay for some of our salary. So that is my goal, projects that we can design in-house. I plan on doing that. Then just wanted to give you a little more information. This is our staff. We have 4 full-time employees, myself, a senior engineering assistant, Linda. Seth is our engineering assistant, and we have an admin assistant, Selena. We don't plan on any new positions this coming year. We coordinate, oversee all federally funded street projects, like I said. And so we, from grant applications, processing and authorizing everything through Caltrans, designing environmental right-of-way construction, we prepare plans and specifications for each project, oversee the bidding, manage projects during construction, including inspections, overseeing any project management firms, that are inspecting our projects. We also, through our encroachment permits, inspect all projects within the city's right-of-way. We oversee various consultants that design, inspect, our surveyor, whatnot. And then we work closely with various agencies, contractors, developers, and other departments within the city. And I am just so glad that we have such a great staff. I came in and all of them have been very helpful, and we all work together to really better this community. So I am just really thankful for everyone here. Some of our goals for this coming year is deliver all federal and grant aid projects on time and within budget, prepare and submit successful grant applications to fund future capital projects, train staff through on-the-job experience and local training seminars when possible. We do have a younger staff that hasn't been with the city as long. And so my goal is to really just train up our staff and really through experience and on-the-job training, really get more knowledge. And we work with all city departments and consultants to develop plans and projects to address the city's transportation and infrastructure needs. At the end of the day, I just really want people to enjoy working with us and want to come back and work in the city of Reedley. So thank you very much, and I'm happy to answer any questions.
There's only one question I would like to ask. Is that the project at Columbia and Reed, are we through with that with the county?
Columbia and Parlier, I think, is what he's asking.
So we've been working with the county, and because they had a transition in their leadership, we went from initially having support and help to having no support, no help, and now we're back to having some support and help. And so we want to really capitalize on that, so it's not a dead project at all. And I think with Mary Lou's help, we've made more progress than we probably have in a while.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's still on our radar, and trying to coordinate that with Fresno County.
Okay, thank you.
I just wanted to say thank you and commend you for coming into this position and just getting on that saddle and riding it out. And I thank you and your staff for your work and your efforts. And I think Reedley will be better and stronger because we have a new engineer that is excited about being here and exactly knows what she's doing. Not that no one, or I'm not saying anything.
Yeah.
Okay, so just making sure. But I appreciate your efforts and your professionalism. Thank you.
My question is on the Manning Buttonwillow to Columbia.
Yes.
What's the anticipated start date on that? Or
so we're going to design this coming year, and then per our grant, we have construction the next year, so it would be 21-22. If we can finish the design quicker, I can pull that forward. But depending, I don't want to over have too many projects under construction at the same time and then upset everyone in town. But
The reason I'm concerned because we have the one at the other end from Frankwood to
So the first one is going to be correct. So the first one, which is Manning, which is the tracks to Frankwood, we will be doing the beginning of this year, and then we'll be designing the other one, and then hopefully the year after we'll construct that.
Yeah, because the reason I talk about, obviously it's in my area, but it's getting pretty bad through that area, and I'm so glad to see that that's finally on track.
Yeah,
and you guys going after that is really been important, and I appreciate that very much.
No problem. Yeah.
And Council, I will say one of the things that I love about Mary Lou, and there was not a single day of downtime when she made the transition, by the way, really an amazing, the best transition I've ever seen. But one of the things that she brought to me early on was, hey, Nicole, I've looked at all these projects, and you realize if we do them all at the same time, every single major street in Reedley is going to have some sort of traffic problem. And I thought, wow, this is the type of thinking that we need. So wanted to share that with you because I thought that was great.
Thank you, because we do get calls on when the streets go down. That's when I get lots of calls. I just want to say thank you for doing good planning. And while we're opening up streets, we're also fixing the underground water and other infrastructure down there. Yeah. Before we're paving the street, instead of paving the street and going back and digging it up.
Yeah.
So I appreciate that, and I think going forward you'll train your staff to have those things in the back of their head as they're working on a project.
Yeah.
And then just wanted to commend you on, hopefully we're going to get that Reed Avenue sidewalk from I to 8th Street.
Yes.
Done. I'm waiting for somebody to get hurt really bad along there because there's not hardly a place to walk there.
Yeah. And part of that.
And if you ride a bike, you got to be out in the street.
Yeah, and part of that project, it's going to take a little bit longer because we are going to have that guy wire removed, so we're coordinating that with PG&E, and that can take a little longer than we would like, but as soon as that guy wire is removed, we will definitely start construction.
Yeah, that's one that I travel in that area a lot, and I've almost run down people a few times. So, just a comment on the I Street project. I see that we're using the vehicle impact fee funds there, and I was wondering how many dollars that's going to be.
So that was $150,000, and that was previously allocated. And then now that we're combining it, it'll still remain that $150,000.
So that was already allocated
this
year?
Yeah, fiscal year 19-20, yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you.
I had a question on alleys. How do you go about deciding what alleys get done? Or
So I've coordinated that with Russ and his water meter readers and solid waste who drive them every day. But if you guys have some that you think should be done, I am all ears. And, you know, if you guys have any streets or whatnot or sidewalk projects, I know we have some maps and whatnot, but you guys live here, you guys know everything, and so if you guys have project, well, not everything, but you know what's needed here, or you hear some of the complaints, you know, from some of the residents. I know I'm going after an ATP project to get a lot of the sidewalks down done around Washington, Jefferson, that area. So I'm willing and able to hear any comments or recommendations that you guys have for any projects that you want to see.
Great.
Yeah.
Is it possible to have a list of those alleys you're going to be working on that you've communicated with Russ?
Yeah.
So that if we see something, we're not duplicating you?
Yeah, and I have been coordinating with him. So we have the 9 that we're doing, but I think we will make an overall list so that in 2 years when we do have an application again, we have those alleys ready and which ones we're gonna try to go after.
Okay. One thing about your SB1 funds coming in, it's so sad how low those are what they should be. And because those funds are going to a project that's going to be dead in the water, they should be coming to the cities and the counties for road maintenance, and it's not happening.
Yeah. The one thing I will say that I'm very grateful that we have is the Measure C. That definitely helps us to go after the local COG and CMAQ dollar grants. You know, the 11.47% match, that helps us completely. I do wish we had a little more from SB1, but anything we have, we're very grateful for.
Yeah, because that fund alone was higher than the previous fund, and we're getting less money from it.
Yeah.
And that is the sad part about that. It's robbing that fund to pay for that high-speed rail project. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And that's dead in the water.
Yeah.
And that's what's sad about that.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, one of the projects that's always been on my mind, and before even a lot of you folks were employed by the city, was that once 180 was built, Franklin, we had talked about years ago on applying for Measure C funding to do Reed Avenue or Franklin, whichever one was feasible. Because after 180 was going to be completed, the traffic jam was going to be quite heavy. And I asked that question a few years ago, but I guess it was nothing in black and white.
Correct.
No.
That you could go back and look and see if there was any information on it.
I'll look
so
at it.
Is what kind of a procedure do you have to do to apply yourself and request it from agency funding for a project like that? Just to put it in their mind that this is one project where we would love to have it come from 180 to Reed Avenue.
You know, your timing is really good on that, council member, because as our COG rep knows, Measure C is up for renewal in 26, and so they're moving it forward a couple of years early. And so there's going to be a committee that starts this year of putting together all of the projects that could potentially be funded with a new Measure C renewal. Mm-hmm. And so that's one that we can tell them about, the committee, to see if we can get it on the list. So you're talking about a Reed Avenue, two lanes in each direction, or a Franklin Avenue, one of those two streets?
At one time we talked about, just like Manning Avenue.
Okay.
This is quite a few years ago, which we knew there was going to be an impact on Reed Avenue or Franklin, whichever one was decided on. That could be a very important Main Street into Reed Lane.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, one thing good is we actually got two insets off of 180, Reed and Frankwood,
yes,
which originally was only supposed to be Frankwood.
Right.
And I said, you guys, you can't do that to this city.
No.
If they would have all dumped into Frankwood, they were not going to have a drop at Reed Avenue originally.
Because if it could be possible, if that could be in before the Measure C committee, it would give us plenty of time to talk to landowners in Frankwood
along the way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And advise them that this is what we're planning to ask for.
Mm-hmm.
And to be aware that it could impact those property owners.
Mm-hmm.
But it would be a lot safer for the public.
Mm-hmm.
If I remember correctly, when we were looking at Measure C and increase it, that was one of the reasons, because Reed is not a state route. And that was one of the problems with bringing it in, is you couldn't get the state funds
right
as easy as you could get your Measure C funds. And so that was one of the issues, is the funding part was a critical issue. And when they started talking about redoing Measure C early, that's one of the first things we all started thinking about, was how can that extend into the outer streets of Reedley, because what you do if you come in on Frankwood or Reed Avenue, it gives you an exact loop to the main, to Highway 99,
mm-hmm.
180, you've got a loop, and so
mm-hmm.
you've got access both directions into the city of Reedley with 4-lane traffic.
Mm-hmm.
And so you're moving, you're not having a flow problem.
Mm-hmm.
So, but that, if I remember correctly, Councilman Salino, one of the issues was the funding issue through the state. The monies is not, is available for that because it's not a state
Hold back, but I couldn't remember what it was.
But it came up, so people were thinking about it.
Okay.
And you're right, get it on the agenda now. Get them aware of it.
Yeah, we'll definitely do that.
Thank you.
All right, thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Lou. And we need to ask questions of the public. So we'll take this time and open the phone lines for the public. No? Oh, no public. Very good. Okay. We move on then to Public Works, Mr. Russ Robertson. Can we take a break? How about a 5-minute break?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Thank you. Very good. We call this meeting back in order, and we have the next session on Public Works, Mr. Russ Robertson.
Good evening. It's my pleasure to present to you this evening the Public Works Department's proposed budget for the fiscal year 2020-2021. So the Public Works Department is comprised of several different divisions: the Water Division, the Parks and LLMD Maintenance Division, Street Maintenance, Solid Waste, Fleet Maintenance, Electrical, and Wastewater. The department has 49 full-time employees and 10 part-time employees. And if I could just take a 10-minute commercial, this week does happen to be a National Public Works Week. So I do want to give just a quick, some quick kudos to our Public Works department, the hardworking men and women of our Public Works department. They are dedicated, loyal employees, and especially during this pandemic difficult time, they've just really stepped up to the plate. And I don't have to look far for an example. Just last night, we had high winds in the city, and we had some trees fall at various locations throughout the city, and each of them responded to the call without complaint and cleaned up the mess expeditiously. So I just wanted to say that we are very blessed to have such a good group of folks in our Public Works Department. The department oversees 31 contracts and agreements. It provides staff oversight to the Downtown Streetscape Committee. And for fiscal year 2020-2021, we have anticipated revenues of $16,888,917, and we have proposed expenditures in the budget document of $12,746,413. Accomplishments: there are over 100 Public Works Department accomplishments listed in the draft budget document. You can find those on pages 256 through 259. I just want to point out a couple highlights. So we did capture and dispose of 880 pounds of sharps. That's our needles program as part of our 2019 sharps program. That's a lot of needles to make up 880 pounds. We completed street surface treatment, which is crack sealing, on various streets throughout the city, including Button Willow Avenue, Frankwood Avenue, Dinuba Avenue, and that was a good successful project doing those streets, and really helps the pavement condition out a lot. Completed over 400 sidewalk repairs and also trimmed more than 250 trees throughout the city. We also completed phase two of the SCADA system upgrade project at the wastewater treatment plant. We installed electric vehicle charging stations in the City Hall parking lot back where the Royal Valley building used to be. We completed landscape and irrigation improvements to median islands on Dinuba Avenue and North Avenue. You may recall there was median islands, one specifically on North Avenue across from Lincoln School, that had been in pretty rough shape ever since the drought hit us and the state forbid us to water median islands, and that was grass. And so it died. We also had irrigation problems in that median, so we finally got around to making a good drought-tolerant landscape in that median, and it looks very nice now. And the other one on Dinuba Avenue is, I believe, at M Street, where we had an old water well site. Mm-hmm. That water well site was ran into by a car several years ago. And we finally had time and to really make that look a lot nicer and put some drought-tolerant landscape in that as well. So the department processed and completed over 3,700 work orders as well. So goals, the Public Works Department goals for this next fiscal year are referenced in the draft budget document on pages 259 and 260. So a couple of highlights of our goals for this next fiscal year. Review and revise the sewer spill prevention plan. Improve lighting on the rail to trail. This has been a passion of our city managers that we get some lighting on the rail to trail, specifically between Dinuba Avenue and Button Willow Avenue, where we have very sparse lighting. Mm-hmm. And so we are continuing to look at any funding possibilities to try to get some solar lighting or something in that area to improve that. Complete the sewer system master plan. Replace turf areas at Dinuba Avenue and Button Willow Avenue roundabout. That roundabout, ever since its construction, we've struggled with the landscape there. The state does have a requirement that whenever you put turf by hardscape, so we've got turf by a street and also by a sidewalk, you can no longer use sprinklers as irrigation. So that project, we had to install these little bubblers that come out of the ground. And so there's thousands of little bubblers that come out of the ground. Of course, they plug up continuously, and you can't tell if they're plugged until the grass dies. And then you say, oh, there's got to be a problem there. And it just has been pretty much a maintenance nightmare. So we are going to be removing that turf, replacing it with some nice drought-tolerant landscape and improve that area. We also want to develop a standard operating procedure for water main leak repairs and flushing per National Pollutant Discharge Elimination System compliance, and complete phase three of the SCADA system upgrade project, including the rehabilitation of sewer lift stations. I know council's familiar with that project as it came before council just a few short weeks ago. We want to complete construction of our GAC treatment facilities at well 13 and our system upgrades at well 14. Those projects are in progress. Well 13, those treatment facilities should be completed and the well up and running within the next 30 days. They're nearly finished with that. The upgrades at well 14, we're looking at the beginning of summer before that's completed, but those are on track, on schedule, and going well. We also want to begin construction of off-site GAC treatment facilities for water wells 12 and 5A. And council, you may recall that we purchased a piece of property across the street mm-hmm. from Donuts to Go mm-hmm. Using the settlement funds that we procured from the responsible parties for TCP contamination. And so that piece of property will house the treatment vessels and all the treatment facilities for wells 12 and 5A. That design has went a little slower than we anticipated. We've had some coordination extended efforts with other utilities, such as Out the Irrigation, which is adjacent to the site along East Avenue. But we're working through that, and it should happen. We're hoping to get into construction by the end of summer. The Public Works Department goals are consistent with our capital outlay appropriations and our five-year capital improvement plan as outlined in Section 15 of the draft budget document. So our revenue projections, the Public Works Department relies on four major revenue streams. That's gas tax and then our enterprise fund, which is sewer, water, and solid waste. So gas tax, you may recall it in recent years, we had some shortfalls in gas tax. Things weren't going really well. Things were starting to actually look positive, and that this year would even be a positive outlook for gas tax revenues, and then the pandemic happened, and now we are anticipating shortfalls for the 2019-2020 fiscal year, as well as for next year, the 2020-21 fiscal year, also forecasting shortfalls in our gas tax revenue. Sewer revenues have been stable. However, we will have to look at inflationary adjustments in the 2021 fiscal year in order to keep pace with increasing cost. And that holds true as well for water. Water Enterprise Fund has been an area of concern, and inflationary increases to water service rates will also be necessary in 2020 for the fund to remain solvent.
Can I ask a question sure. there? I'm just curious, has having people at home, has that raised the water usage? Or have you noticed anything?
Yes, we have. When the pandemic first happened, we saw an increase in residential water use. Hmm. I think more people were at home. Mm-hmm. At first, it was like a spike, and I even shared with city manager that, wow, we're seeing a lot. And then it kind of tapered off and okay. kind of leveled out a little bit. But, yeah. Hmm.
Interesting. Yeah. Thank you.
Solid waste. You may recall council in 2018 approved a five-year schedule of rates for the solid waste fund to remain solvent. So all three of our utility rates this year, we don't anticipate any major increases in our utility rates. We're simply looking at inflationary rate increases to keep pace with increased cost as a result of whether it's the increase in minimum wage. It seems to, you know, raise all of our cost. I'd like to move on to capital outlay highlights. So in the Public Works Department, we do have some capital that we are proposing to expend this next fiscal year. I just want to share some highlights of that. In the Parks Maintenance Division, we're proposing $10,500 for a stand-on aerator. And in case you didn't know what an aerator was, I kind of wanted to share some pictures. And in the bottom right-hand corner is a small one. And I don't know if you can see it very clearly, but an aerator has prongs that are about 5 to 6 inches long. And they just simply attack the lawn. And they make divots in the lawn. And you would think, well, that's tearing the lawn up, really. But it doesn't. And as the chart shows at the bottom of the slide, our soils tend to be very compacted in parks, such as the sports park, Camacho Park. They're played on a lot of sports. So the soil gets really compacted, and that affects our grass growth. And the grass roots are compacted and shallow, and the grass struggles to stay green. Once we open that up, then the nutrients, the water, and the air can now enter the soil, and it results in a vibrant grass that's not only healthier, but it's safer for people to play on. It's softer, it's green. Currently, we've been renting a stand-on aerator one time a year. We would really should be aerating the lawns at least twice a year, possibly three, and some years maybe even four, depending on the weather. So we would like to purchase one to have at our disposal so that we can do this several times a year to our lawns and improve the quality of our parks. Also, we're proposing $36,000 for a parks utility truck. We have several divisions this year that are requesting procurement of new vehicles. And I just want to go over that really quick. Our standard is in Public Works that we don't replace vehicles until they are 10 years old or older. So we don't go out and, oh, this one's 3 years old already, we're going to replace it. So this one, I believe it or not, is a 1989 Chevy 1500 that we're replacing. And it actually just died on us. So we ran out of luck. It is dead now. But these trucks sound like a lot of money at first glance. But this is a utility truck. So we'd like to procure the truck. We usually get a great price either from a state contract, but we also have a fantastic partnership with Martins, who has really stepped up to the bat. And oftentimes we'll get close to that state contract, and when we add the local vendor price preferencing, they've been a great partner for getting vehicles at a very reasonable price. A utility truck has the utility bed on it with the toolboxes, so we can put all of our sprinklers in it, all of our sprinkler parts, all of the little things that tend to get loose in that. So for $36,000, we get the truck, the utility bed, and we get the emergency lights on top. So that covers everything. So it's very reasonable, actually, what we've been able to procure vehicles for. A 72-inch rotary mower implement, $5,000 for that. And this is primarily used on the rail to trail, but we also use it in large areas, such as the sports park. The one we have is about 20 years old, and it is at the end of its useful life. It's done its duty. Equipment rentals, I just pointed this one out because we had $2,000 appropriated last year for equipment rentals. We're looking at increasing this to $5,000. And this is primarily going to be used for porta potties and hand washing stations at our river parks. Last year, you know, for the last several years, we've been renting porta potties for Smith Ferry Park, and that's been very successful. Last year, on a trial basis, we rented porta potties at Reedley Beach. That turned out to be very successful. People really enjoyed having the option, and they didn't have to wait, and they're a little cleaner than what our old restroom typically is. We also wanted to add the hand washing stations this year in the parks, obviously, for COVID-19 concerns, as well as just cleanliness.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
Have you ever looked at the porta potties? Have you looked at what it would, is there any advantage to buying our own? And have them, so are we better off renting on this?
Well, actually, I think we've done a quick analysis, and I think we're better off renting. Okay. Just for, they do clean them.
They keep the surface up on the right.
They do the maintenance, and they pump them out.
Yeah.
They're responsible for vandalism. We've had vandalism. We've had the one at Smith Ferry actually pushed down the bank into the river one time. We've had some things, unfortunately, happen.
Nobody in it, I hope.
I hope not either. I hope not either.
What a ride.
You got me on that one. Moving on to street maintenance, Article 8. We're proposing $3,000 for a new air compressor. This is for the stationary air compressor that we have at the Corporation Yard. Believe it or not, it's 25 years old. And the only reason why we're replacing it is the tank has corroded. So I want to buy the new one, the same brand as the one we had, because this has done fantastic. Equipment rentals, this is a new appropriation for this fiscal year, $6,000. And most of this is going to be going toward a stump grinder. You can see the picture on the bottom of the slide, a stump and root grinder. What we've done in recent years is when we've taken trees out, we've actually had to hire a contractor to come in with their stump grinder, do the work. It's become more and more difficult that we have to work around their schedule. Their costs have increased. So we would like to just set aside money to rent our own so that we can work on our schedule and our timing, and we feel it actually save us some money as well. For water division, capital outlay, water meter replacement. So we're appropriating $150,000 to replace dead meters that we have out in the city. This, unfortunately, is going to be an ongoing expenditure that we're going to be faced with. This is a fact of life now that we have water meters within the city, that they don't last forever. And even the smaller cities around us that may have gotten grant funds for the procurement of meters when they were installed, they're now realizing that, hey, these meters are dying and we've got to come up with the money to replace them. Mm-hmm. So when we talk about the water division struggling financially, this is one of the reasons that we're faced with this pretty monumental expense now in maintaining water meters throughout our city. SWRCB permit fees. This is a new appropriation, and really all we're doing is calling this one out now. The State Water Resources Control Board, just a few short years ago, our permit fees were about $6,000. And we paid for those fees out of our professional services account. And what that is the state will require us to do certain testing in our water division. We will pay for the testing. We'll have the testing done. We send the results to the state. The state then charges us to review, oversee, and approve. So it's a pretty good gig, I gotta say. But what's been really disturbing is this year alone, our fees are reaching $30,000. So we felt that it's necessary to, let's point that out now, and we can see every year what we're actually paying to the state in those fees. Sewer. We're proposing $30,000 for a canopy. This is a steel canopy that would be installed at the wastewater treatment plant, basically to protect our equipment. We have some portable pumps, as you see there in the picture, and they have been exposed to the elements. They're expensive pieces of equipment, and this steel canopy can last for many decades and protect our equipment so we don't have to replace it as often.
So is that kind of like the horse corral?
It is going to be just a steel canopy. Okay. Correct. Just like a horse corral canopy would be. Wastewater is also proposing $60,000 for the procurement of two trucks. And again, both trucks are over 10 years old that we're going to be replacing. Tree removal, $15,000 for the removal of eucalyptus trees at the wastewater treatment plant. I don't know if you recall, but on the north side of the plant, between the plant and the adjacent subdivision, there's a grove of eucalyptus trees, mm-hmm. and those were planted decades ago as a remediation measure. It was actually required by the state that we plant those trees because those trees will suck up nitrates out of the soil. We now have test wells surrounding the plant, and that acts as our remediation. And so we did apply and get permission from the state to remove those trees. The reason, I know it acts as a great barrier between the plant and the subdivision, but some of those trees are becoming dangerous. Mm-hmm. So now they're in age to where limbs, we don't want limbs to fall on the subdivision wall. We don't want it to fall toward the plant. So the $15,000 is to just remove some of our dangerous trees and limbs that exist out there.
And that could do the same thing to improve it right along Reed Avenue by the river.
On Reed by the river.
From the manual, you can look at trees. Those, every so often, you can see those things would crack and fall over.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So, don't they suck up a lot of water?
They do.
Yeah, they're heavy.
It gets dangerous in the winter when it rains. Mm-hmm. They suck up the water, and then when the winds come, they're heavy. Right. They're top heavy. Mm-hmm. So that is cause for concern. Mm-hmm.
Is it better to completely remove them or have them trimmed?
They grow very fast. I mean, it'd be ideal to completely remove them, but there are some benefits to having a semblance of a barrier between the plant and the subdivision. You know how it is, the plant was there first before the house is, but yet, you know, to minimize complaints of noise and odor,
sure,
it's nice to have a barrier there. Also, we're in the wastewater division appropriating $30,000 for fiber conduit installation. I know Mr. Malikian touched this briefly last week, but, you know, internet service is critical for our wastewater treatment plant. It's been very poor internet service out there, and this is a picture of our SCADA system that relies heavily on internet service. So I want to thank Mr. Malikian for kind of taking point on this project, and he did a lot of the work to get this, to make this project possible. So I thank him for that. That will really improve operations at the plant. Also, we're looking at this at Olson Avenue sewer main replacement. That project is pretty much finished with design. It's shelf ready. We're ready to go out the bid. So if you look at our sewer fund balance, you might see that it's might look very healthy. We've been stockpiling money over the last couple of years in order to do this project. This project would start on the east side of the Olson Avenue Bridge, and it would go all the way to the wastewater treatment plant. So this line is the exact same line that failed on us about 3 years ago. And this line is the same age. So this is, we're on pins and needles of getting this project finished before we have another incident. And this is the main line that feeds nearly all of the city.
Wasn't there a major clog after that stop? We had it right at the bridge.
There was a major clog that started the whole collapse. That's correct.
So did we replace part of that?
We replaced from the north side of Emanuel High School on Reed Avenue.
Okay.
All of that was replaced all the way past the cemetery.
Okay, so that whole
to
line.
About Huntsman,
yeah.
If I remember correctly.
Yeah.
And then we started down Olson, and we stopped short of the bridge.
Right.
So you stopped at the bridge. Okay.
Correct. And this would take the line, start from that location, take it across the bridge, which is a pretty big expense, and make the curve and go all the way to the wastewater treatment plant.
So it'll hang underneath the bridge, is that right?
It hangs on the side in a casing.
On the side.
In a casing, yeah. So okay. It's... Yeah.
I couldn't remember. Thank you.
Sure.
We came to the council for approval to remove part of the line that was kind of an old line. That if we left it alone, it could have problems later on.
Mm-hmm.
You're absolutely right. And that was in front of the cemetery.
Right.
Yeah, that was a reverse flow that we were trying to push uphill for many years.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Because that line used to go under the river down further by the cemetery.
Mm-hmm.
And it clogged up, and of course we couldn't fix the line under the river. They won't even allow a line to go under a river anymore. So you're exactly right. That did fix that problem with that project.
Yeah, I remember going and looking in the hole down here on Olson Avenue. It's like, ooh, that's far down.
It's deep. In solid waste, we are proposing $6,000 for bin liners. In our commercial bins, mostly the ones that are located at grocery stores or, you know, they discharge of food waste. We have a lot of issues with the bottoms of the bins rusting out.
Hmm.
And we either have to weld new bottoms on the bins, which is time-consuming and a little bit expense, or we have to buy new bins. So we found these liners that other cities have tried and said they like them. So we want to try this, and we think it'll result in some good cost savings for us.
Is it just a hard plastic? I can't tell.
It's a very hard plastic, Okay. Yeah. And it just simply bolts inside just like a... It goes in, bolts on the sides.
Like kind of like a bin on your truck.
Yes.
Like bin liner.
Correct, yeah.
Interesting.
This year, the vehicle impact fee, we're proposing an appropriation of $200,000, which is the same appropriation as last year. And like last year, we'd like to set aside $50,000 of that for alley reconstruction and repairs. Well, the picture's a little bit hard to see on the left, but that is an alley that... in pretty bad shape. The picture on the right is an alley that was addressed in this year's alley repair project, and our garbage truck drivers have just loved it. They really felt the difference, and water meter readers have commented. So this has been, And we do have a lot of apartments through some areas of town that we worked on that they have ingress egress out of the alleys, and they've been very appreciative of that as well. The remaining $150,000 of that $200,000, we're proposing a road reconstruction project on Washington Avenue. And this would be Columbia to Haney, so it is on the south side of Jefferson School. And it is in very bad shape. It is past the point of any kind of surface treatment and requires a full reconstruction at this point. You may also see in your budget that we've appropriated some additional funds out of the VIF. We have a VIF fund balance. So the VIF was first introduced in 2013, I believe. And each year that we've done a project, obviously we don't want to exceed our appropriation. So we've always had this little bit of money left over from every project. Well, we can't really do anything with it until we compile enough to do a project. Doesn't really pay to go out and do a $20,000 project in 1 year. Can't get too far with that. So we have a VIF fund balance that we would like to expend because it's gotten to a point that we can do a very viable project with that fund balance. We would like to take $50,000 of the fund balance and throw that into alley repair as well. So the total alley repair for this fiscal year would be $100,000. Then we'd like to take $250,000, which is almost the remaining fund balance of the VIF, and we would like to do a slurry seal project on JK and L streets, and that is just to the west of I Street, those streets, JK and L, kind of surrounding Washington School there. Public Works personnel, the department is not proposing the addition or deletion of any full-time staff positions in the 2021 draft budget document. And so that concludes my presentation. Be happy to answer any questions you may have.
I haven't heard of any complaints, for sure.
Well, good. That's a good thing.
You've been busy.
It's been a busy year, and we hope to continue that. We do.
Great work. Any questions, Council?
I had some questions. I notice on page 256 of the budget, you had down in the water division that you secured 886 water quality samples. And my question there is, is this testing that we have to do for the state, or is this what's happening with those?
Yeah, the state... every year, the state's microscope gets a little bit bigger and better. So we went through a stage 4 UCMR new testing requirement that threw a whole bunch more testing at us. So we do testing. There's quarterly, there's annual testing, there's monthly testing. So when my dad was in charge of the water, he used to say that we test for almost 80 constituents, and he thought that was a big deal. We test now for about 160 constituents. So is our water getting worse, or is our microscope getting bigger that we're seeing everything that's in the water? That's not for me to say, but our regulations and requirements from the state continue to increase.
Mm-hmm. So we're taking these samples. Are we sending those samples somewhere, or are we processing? Don't we do like water sample testing or do some kind of testing here?
Yes,
internally?
Our wastewater treatment plant has a certified lab. They're able to do some of our basic testing. There are specialized testing that we do have to send to an outside lab. So it's about 50-50 at this point.
Okay, on page 260 of the budget, it talks about you initiated the ninth phase of the citywide insect abatement program. And my question is, what insects?
So each year we started, and I guess for lack of better terminology, we're calling it phases, but we started insect abatement program in our sewer manholes. So we took a section of town, and we could only afford to do, sections at a time.
Okay.
So I know that's a lot of phases. I apologize. Maybe we'll think of something better to call it next time.
Well, I'm just wondering, you know, if you did mosquitoes, that maybe we could get the mosquito abatement
it's
to help
mostly
you
for,
out if that was
right.
if it was mosquitoes. But
it's mostly cockroaches.
That's probably not mosquitoes.
I was
going to
say, wasn't it the cockroach issue that was? Yeah.
That is correct.
Oh, yeah, I've seen those.
We have a guy that comes and sprays every week or 2 weeks. We have him spray our water. I don't know if that's the right thing to do, but you can almost saddle these boogers, these big roaches that come out of there. So,
yeah,
they do need some attention.
Out of the water meter box, yeah.
Yeah.
And then on that same page, down towards the bottom, you talk about budget highlights for 2020 to 21. And it says procurement of organics containers and bins for the solid waste division. So is the state mandating that we buy separate containers for our food waste? Is that what that organics thing is?
Unfortunately, that is a state mandate to add organics recycling to all of our commercial businesses.
Beginning when?
Oh, beginning this year, the calendar year we're in. So without going into a large, long explanation, I've had several meetings with the state and expressed my dissatisfaction with the state on the organics mandate issue. Mm-hmm. Basically, first hoping that they will get their recycling issue in line, because as you know, we recently raised solid waste rates to pay for the recycling fiasco that's happening around us. But also with organics, that is going to result in a cost to the city, no matter how you slice it. Mm-hmm. So without going into a long explanation, we are trying our best to work with the state at this point on the mandate.
Have they come up with a disposable area for this?
That is one of the issues. So I mean, I know it's a public meeting being recorded, but they were in this meeting, so happily say this, that when we sat at the table and I posed them the question, why are we taking organics out of a landfill that burns off its gases, and now for the safety of the environment, we're composting it in the ground and letting people put it on the surface where the gases, and their response was that, well, this is a mandate,
yeah.
Not really an explanation. Like you probably can sense my frustration a little bit with, but we're working through it.
I understand where you're going for. There's things that they propose that they're mandate, but they don't think about it before they mandate.
Yep. Yep. Okay, then my favorite line item is item 55. I figured out I'm glad you stated what you're going to plan to use for that money this year, but I still don't like it. I think we are getting a lot of money from the LTF funds. We're also getting money back from the county for the transportation that we changed, and we're getting more money for streets and roads, and I think that this vehicle impact fee funds, because we do our trash in-house, should stay within the city of Reedley and should stay within that fund. I don't think it should be pulled out for our roads and streets. And because we are getting more funding for the roads and streets, was described earlier, we're never going to have enough funding to make our roads and streets at 100%. That's never going to happen. And being a small city, even our arterials don't get funding because we're not Fresno or Clovis or along the 99 corridor. So we tend to get less funding in that respect, but I just see the amounts of funding for our roads going up, but yet we're still pulling vehicle impact fee funds from our trash account, and I am vehemently opposed to that, as y'all well know. So nothing against you, Russ. We're buddies, but
I don't like that, and I think we should really reevaluate that. And I thought that that was going to happen this year, and I don't see it. I see the same amount, the $200,000, just as it has been in the last quite a few years. And I think we're asking our public to pay more for those fees, but we're using this for roads and streets, and to me that's wrong. Anyway, I'm done with my sermon. On to my other questions. On page, sorry, I had eye surgery and I can't hardly read this, 263, it talks about, I looked in, and you had not changed your amount of employees, but yet, according to the budget line item for salary and wages, it went up by about $180,000 from what it was for this 2019-20 estimates to what it is for the 2020-21 budget. And I was wondering why.
Do you want to address that?
And I'm wondering if you guys moved funding around or something. That's
sure. Council member Fast, so part of that increase, the city every year assumes some, especially in a negotiations, well, I guess it, from year to year, if we have a current bargaining agreement in place that has salary increases programmed, then we would budget for those.
Mm-hmm.
If we're in a negotiations year, it is a best practice to assume some level of increase, whether or not it's ultimately negotiated or approved by the council. We still assume some level of salary increase, so that explains part, at least part of the increase.
Mm-hmm.
As well as if, and you already touched on it, as far as if we're moving salaries from one department to another, based on where staff are spending their time. So again, it's as the city manager indicated, there's no promotions, there's no staff increases associated in the budget.
Yeah, so this really ties into what we were talking about with the engineering budget, where we were reallocating costs around according to what the auditors had wanted us to do. So I want to caution that not all $180,000 is related to what we assume is going to be negotiated, because it isn't even going to be close to that.
Right.
Well, that's I take into consideration that before I even pull out any numbers.
Yeah, a lot has to do with the reallocation, where we're taking things and reallocating based upon what the auditors had asked us. So the $20,000, for instance, from engineering, that was a reduction in theirs, is going off into public works.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so also in the, this is a salary one too. On page 273, it's gas tax salaries, full-time salaries. And that's like $110,000 more. So
I can,
there's two of them there. So
I can address that.
That's like a lot. It's like $290,000 more to public works. Why?
Right. I mentioned in my presentation that the last several years gas tax has been trending downward. When that happened, instead of laying off staff, we moved some of the salaries into Article 8, which is also a street maintenance fund applicable for salaries.
Mm-hmm.
Gas tax this year was anticipated to come up back to some normalcy. So in January, February, when the budget was done, we moved salaries back into gas tax where they really should be and where we've had them for years past.
Okay.
So that's the reason for increasing gas tax. Now COVID-19 might, you know, force us to make some adjustments, but that did I explain that?
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So the there's a corresponding reduction to salary spreads to Article 8 on the following page 274. You can see salaries are no longer budgeted in Article 8 because they're essentially being put back into gas tax.
Okay.
It's not dollar for dollar again because of assumptions made in the budget, as well as costs that impact salaries over time.
Mm-hmm.
But that said, that's kind of the shift.
Okay. Okay. Okay, I have a couple of questions. On the Parks Department, it has utilities, but there's no actual expenditures on that item before. Is that a new account on page 272? It's $28,000. And what is that for?
Yes.
Because it's, we have electrical and we have telephone.
Correct.
And then we have utilities. So what's
correct.
The utilities?
So that account is new for this upcoming year, proposed that that the water usage at the parks would be paid to the water fund. So that way there's a, again, this is all within the overall vein and spirit of making sure that the right funds are paying for the right costs. So this would be a revenue into the water fund from the general fund.
Okay, let's see what else I got here. Oh, more salaries. Okay, another salaries, $55,000 more in Public Works Water Department. And what I found interesting was also $55,000 in the health insurance premium for that section. Is the health insurance going to go up that much? I found that interesting. That's on page 279, towards the bottom of the page, in the Public Works Water Department.
Right. You may recall that an item was brought forth to council recently that in order to install or replace dead water meters, we had been using a contractor.
Yes.
And,
okay.
You know, due to an effort.
Is that one position or two?
We actually made a part-time water position into a full-time, and we added one full-time worker position.
So adding two people.
That, correct. In the water division. Did you want to add?
So,
but that added $55,000 in insurance?
Well, depending upon the plan that the employees are under, that's part of the increase, as well as there's an assumed 5% overall increase in
sure.
health insurance premiums for
sure.
the city. So,
I understand that.
Yeah, and I believe they're both on the on a family plan, the folks that were added, so that's the highest cost plan. So we have to budget accordingly.
More health insurance premiums. What else did I have? Oh, would you just review again the vehicle impact fee fund on page 288 that we're paying out? So I have alley reconstruction for $100,000. So 50
yeah, correct.
Of that's from this year. I don't quite understand because you got $650,000 here.
So we are proposing to appropriate $200,000 into the VIF fund. You may recall that of that $200,000, we were going to set aside $50,000 for alley reconstruction, and also out of the VIF fund balance, we were going to set aside $50,000 out of the fund balance. So that comes to the $100,000 for alley. It should be reconstruction or repair. Also out of the fund balance would be the $250,000 for the slurry seal project at JK and L Streets. Then the I Street project, as city engineer mentioned in her presentation, has been postponed. So $150,000 was budgeted for in 2019-20. That project was postponed due somewhat to the change in engineer position. And so we pushed that into this year's budget.
Okay, so for the ice or for the slurry seal, that's $150,000 for this year, this coming year's budget. Is
no, for
right?
the slurry seal, it's $250,000 for this next fiscal year's budget, and that we basically had a fund balance of $300,000. Yeah, this basically takes all of our fund balance monies away.
So why didn't we use this in prior years if this was so important that you guys have this vehicle impact fee money? Why hasn't it been used up?
As I explained in my presentation, we every year when we appropriate funds for a project, we do our absolute best not to exceed that appropriation because there's no other funds anywhere else. So our projects, you know, when they come in the bid, they come up short. It could be $18,000, it could be $25,000 that we have monies left over. We really like to pool that money in order to now go out to a substantial size project, because otherwise to go through the design bid, the design engineering and bid process for a small size project, even $100,000 in this day and age, is a lot of staff time, a lot of expense. So we want to shoot for the biggest bang for our buck. So when we get this fund balance accumulated, then we can go out and do something substantial with it.
And in certain cases, we did pre-plan to fill in budget gaps for a project. So the I Street one is a perfect example of that, where all of the funding sources that we're cobbling together, we knew we would still need funding sources. And so that's one where we had thought ahead by a couple of years to fill in VIF dollars for that, because obviously I Street, we feel is heavily impacted by the garbage vehicles as well. So that fills in that project as well. So what you see represents a couple of years of planning on the VIF. It's not that we're just going one year at a time to plan and do a project. And I did mention to you that we, as staff, are looking at the VIF. We understand that this is something that for years, when we started it, was in desperate need. We didn't have an SB1. We didn't have some of the other Measure C monies. This particular summer, Russ and his staff will be doing some evaluation of some plans and projects, and I don't want to say too much about the evaluation right now, but the VIF will be part of that evaluation. So
that's all I have. Thank you. Thank you for your patience, everybody.
Thank you, Mary. Appreciate that. I had a question on the aerator. Out of curiosity, you said that machine actually just kind of brings life to the lawn. I was talking to a gentleman today, and I specifically asked him about lawn care and what makes, in my area, the lawn, the soil is awfully hard. You know, there's a lot of alkaline, I guess. And I asked what could help with that. He said gypsum. Is that what it's called? Would that be anything that could be used, or do you use any of that in our lawns? Or?
It can be used in a playground or public setting. It's not preferable. Okay. It is a chemical. I know farmers use it in the agricultural arena. It's a soil amendment, but it's not something I would really consider using in a public.
I'm just curious, because I just today I spoke with a gentleman about it.
Yeah, it's a soil amendment that does help.
Okay. Very good. And I was wondering on the graffiti abatement, how's that project coming along, by the way, with graffiti and being able to stay on top of it?
Our graffiti in the city seems to come and go in waves. It'll be quiet for a little while, and then all of a sudden we'll just have a rash of it. We have noticed an uptick since COVID-19 with more people at home.
Sure.
Maybe they're a little bored, things to do. We've really tried to make some progress in the area as far as being a little bit more particular with our graffiti cover-up. To be honest, we've been a little bit disappointed in some of our things on that side. You know, instead of painting the whole wall, we're just painting the section that got graffitied. Mm-hmm. We're working on taking the extra step to paint the whole wall because we're just replacing graffiti with blight, and that's not what we want to do.
Yeah, sure.
So I'll be honest that we're not perfect in that area, but we're aware of it, and we're making progress and strides toward that end.
Good. Great.
Speaking of the graffiti, have we come any closer to maybe getting a truck that you mix the colors? And
at this point, we're continuing to seek funding options. They're expensive.
Yes.
And they're not something that we can really just lay out the money for, but we are continuously looking for options to get some funding for that.
Yeah, because like you said, some of the blotching is worse almost than the graffiti.
Right.
Because they'll use a completely different color paint, not even anything close.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Can I add one more comment?
Sure.
I appreciate your pictures of the different capital outlay things. Some of the items, I didn't quite know what they were, but showing the picture really helped with that. Okay. So thank you.
I just wanted to say, you know, I understand the two sides about the VIF issue, or you know, I appreciate the fact that, you know, Mary has a lot of questions. That's good. I appreciate the fact that we have professional people that know how to use our monies accordingly. And the way I see it is, if it's possible, if it's legal, if it's needed, why not? So I appreciate the way in which you handle these particular monies. And I mean, let's face it, our streets, roads, they need help. Not only here, everywhere. Everybody complains about roads. Mm-hmm. And yes, we want to see them kept up and looking good, mostly without the potholes, and gives our cars issues. But I just wanted to voice that out, because I know there's a lot of work that goes into all this, bringing it together, and you know, it's a really difficult time of the year. But I simply want you to know that it's greatly appreciated, because it is a lot of work, and I know there's a lot of planning and a lot of headaches. And so I thank you, and I thank Mary for what she does as well, and I thank the council. It's great to be part of this team.
Absolutely.
So you all make it easy for us.
Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you.
Anyhow, any other questions? We can move on. Number one, number two, going through one.
Thank you.
Thank you, Russ. Good job.
Thanks.
Very good. I think that covers everything for this evening. Thank you, everyone. Have a good night. Hopefully, you'll be able to sleep like Petunia.
Thank you, Mayor.
Thank you. Have a good night.